You've been listening to the local news on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. For Thin Air Community Radio, I'm Gavin Dahl. Christopher Mitchell joins us by phone right now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for taking some time to speak with KYRS Local News. Chris Mitchell runs MuniNetworks.org, M-U-N-I-Networks.org, an online clearinghouse of information about community broadband, and he's the director of the Telecommunications as Commons Initiative with the New Rules Project of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. The reason I've got a leading national expert on community broadband on the radio today is Washington State's legislature wrapped up their special session yesterday, and my guest has been following the discussions in Olympia about legislation that would allow public utility districts to provide telecom services directly to consumers. Basically, your conclusion, Chris, is Washington's legislature blew it this year. Is that right?
Yes, that is exactly right.
So you wrote on Muni Networks that lobbyists for cable and DSL companies have earned their pay in Washington State this year by preventing good community broadband legislation from ever getting out of committee in Olympia. Can you talk about the bill that was introduced here that Comcast and other companies effectively shut down?
Sure. There's a little bit of background that's helpful, and that is that Washington State is one of 19 that has created barriers to discourage public ownership of broadband networks. In Washington State, the barrier is that the public utility districts are not permitted to offer direct retail services. And so a number of public utility districts have invested in these fiber optic networks that allow other ISPs, independent companies typically, to offer the broadband services to residents, which is fine. And actually, it's a model that we actually really like to see as an option for communities. The problem is that it's a model that's very hard to operate in the black. And so in a number of places in Washington State, the public utility districts are operating the networks at a slight loss each year, often covered by wholesale power electricity sales. And so they've done that. But other communities would like to have the option of building a network that would actually cash flow. And they argue it would give them more incentive to invest in rural areas and make sure that everyone's connected with these important networks. And our position is that every community should have the freedom to make this choice. Unfortunately, the state law in Washington does not allow communities to make the choice. The legislature chose for them many years ago. And so for a number of years, we've seen a bill come up that would put that choice back into local hands as to what business model to use. And each year, the big lobbyists, the powerful ones from Frontier and Charter and Comcast, CenturyLink, they're able to bottle it up in committee and make sure it doesn't get out.
So the Wenatchee World picked up this story and reported that Representative John McCoy, a Democrat who represents Tulalip, north of Everett, for our listeners here in eastern Washington and Idaho who may not know western Washington that well, but he was hoping to improve service to rural areas without enough profit potential to attract private sector providers. Can you talk about the term redlining, Chris Mitchell?
Sure. The problem is that unlike electricity, broadband is still treated more like a nicety, something that's nice to have, whereas electricity is rightly seen as an essential utility. And so in electricity, it's not allowed for an electricity provider to just say, we're only going to provide service to some areas and not to others. And Washington State has these public utility districts that I think are a terrific way of dealing with this problem to make sure everyone has access. But in broadband, a private company, let's just say Charter or CenturyLink, Frontier, they are not going to serve people unless they're going to get a significant return on that investment pretty fast. And so it's not even a matter of not serving unprofitable customers. It's also customers that just aren't profitable enough. And so you end up with entire communities or portions of communities that have no access to broadband networks. And so we call it redlining, typically, which is a term that was more came out of historical other banking and other practices where in certain communities were just not allowed to have access to credit or certain types of utilities.
And we're talking about money. We're talking about profitability and low-income communities.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's not necessarily just low-income. It could be, decent income, but in rural areas where the cost of building a network is just high enough that a private company says, it's just not going to be profitable enough, even if we can get a lot of customers you know, they're too far apart, and we don't want to deal with them.
And yet, as you said, Washington has this public utility district model. Eric Polson, who is with the Washington Public Utility District Association, said that PUDs have used the wholesale authority they were granted in 2000, building 4,500 miles of fiber optic cable, investing $300 million in infrastructure, and joining with at least 150 retail providers. There's a story last week on the website, SaveTheInternet.com, run by Free Press, that really pisses me off. Josh Levy writes, quote, "Do you live in America? If you answered yes, you live in a country ranked 16th in the world in broadband penetration, speed, and price." And now, rather than screaming WTF at the top of my lungs, I continued reading, and he says the problem with the U.S. is that we really need to get better broadband competition. So what I want to ask you, Chris, is what is it about our system that causes him to write that we, in fact, have a cheap facade of competition?
Well, there's two challenges in the U.S. that are totally different, that are both important to understand, I think. One is what's seized upon by the private companies to justify why U.S. broadband is lagging in the world. That reason that they typically give is how big we are. You know, I've driven across Washington State. It's beautiful. It's really incredible. And so, in some sense, it doesn't make sense to compare, how difficult it is to connect Washington State to South Korea, which is very dense.
Right.
However, our major cities are often lagging just as badly as our rural areas. And so the simple fact that we have these majestic areas does not explain why we lag so much in broadband, because other very rural nations, France, the Scandinavian countries, have to deal with similar problems, and they've solved it. They solved it with intelligent government policies. And this is the second major problem, the one that Josh really gets at effectively, I think. And that's, for the past 15, 16 years now, the official policy out of Washington, D.C. has been that we should expect facilities-based competition, which is to say that if you want to be able to offer broadband, you should build your own network and offer broadband. The problem with that is that it's incredibly expensive to build your own network, and so we have very limited competition. You know, I mean, Seattle has two providers, basically, Comcast and CenturyLink. And then out in areas around Spokane, you can bet that people would love to have two choices, but they probably just have one. And the reason for that is that federal policy has this idea that someone else is just going to come along and build another network. And because the cost of building that network is so high, it's never going to happen. So other countries have embraced a policy wherein whoever owns the network has to allow other providers to operate on the network. This is, once again, getting back to how the PUDs deal with it presently, which is to say they build the network and others offer services on it. And so in a number of other countries, if you're a phone company, you have to allow your competitors to have access to your network. And so you compete by selling services. You don't compete because you just happen to own the poles and the wires, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a policy that recognizes what we call natural monopoly in economics, which is to say we're never going to have a whole lot of networks competing, you know, each with its own set of wires, each with its own set of towers. Instead, what we should have is one or two common infrastructures over which multiple service providers compete. And so that's where we're at. And in fact, if we had competition, we would see much lower prices in Spokane and probably much better service offerings for the residents and businesses there. It doesn't necessarily solve the problem in rural areas. For that, we really need to get into better government policies, and I think really encouraging the PUDs to encourage to invest more, because they're investing for the good of the community and for economic development, as opposed to just investing for a short-term profit.
Yeah, I got to take a minute here and comment on the fact that Comcast came out to the city council meeting, one of my first city council meetings I attended upon moving to Spokane, and made a presentation about this this new program they had, where if your kids qualify for free or reduced lunches, you get this this cheap internet connection, and isn't that so wonderful? And everybody gave the guy a round of applause. And I literally I'm covering City Hall as a reporter, but I went down and got up onto the mic and made a comment at the very end of the city council meeting. And I said,
I just wanted to comment on your reactions earlier to Kenneth Watts of Comcast. He neglected to mention the context that led to the creation of the Internet Essentials program. And I just wanted to make sure that the council was aware of that. Comcast takeover of NBC Universal was approved in January. The deal was reportedly worth almost $14 billion. Their CEO made over $30 million last year, and Comcast makes billions in profits annually. And I just think you should be asking yourselves where that money goes. This company is not operating in a free market. It's in as many cities as they can, they pursue duopoly. And Consumer Reports wrote in January that the combo of NBC and Comcast, quote, poses some very real threats. That was Consumer Reports. Before you treat Mr. Watts and Comcast like heroes for bridging the digital divide, I just please ask you, with all due respect, to remember that these were conditions that they were forced to do as part of their merger, and these conditions will expire in 3 years. So I'd ask you to please take a few moments and double-check your altars before you pray. Thanks.
Thank you for your poetic words, your adjournment.
And my point was that Comcast was forced to offer lower-cost broadband because of their takeover of NBC Universal. It's one of the conditions placed on them. And so the idea that we would look to Comcast occasionally doing a good deed and go, well, see, these are good corporate citizens. No, they were forced to do that because of their monopolistic tendencies and the last little bit of regulations we still have at the federal level. So my guest is Christopher Mitchell from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Let's talk about this new report from your organization and the Mighty Benton Foundation called Broadband at the Speed of Light. What you conclude is that the fastest networks in the nation are built by local governments.
Yes, and actually we don't talk about it in there, but Chelan offers a gigabit to most of the people that can take service from it, I believe, at this point. And I would suspect other PUDs will be there soon, whereas no one who's getting service from Frontier or Comcast can get a gigabit. And so it's a key point, which is that in this nation, in the United States, if you're getting the fastest broadband that's sort of comparable to what one can get and the best networks around the world, you're probably getting it from a local government. It's the big companies have decided that they'd rather not invest in providing these incredibly fast services, typically because they don't face competition. They don't really feel a pressure to deliver them. But we see community networks delivering the fastest speeds, often the lowest prices, and they are creating a heck of a lot more jobs because they offer better deals to local businesses.
You mentioned Chelan. If folks from Spokane drive west on Highway 2, eventually they'll get to Wenatchee, you'll be in Chelan County. The Chelan Public Utility District has been asking the people in their rural community whether they love or just like the pioneering fiber optic network there. They've had a series of public input meetings. And have you been following this a little bit, Chris?
Yes, we've been keeping an eye on it. It's a great example of how people can have a say over their future.
So if people want to find out more, a good place to start is the muninetworks.org website, Community Broadband Networks, project of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I have not had had time yet to dig through the Broadband at the Speed of Light report, but this was released by the Institute for Local Self-Reliance online at ilsr.org and the Benton Foundation. I want to just take a minute and plug the daily headlines that come out from the Benton Foundation. I wish we did more stories on media and democracy here at KYRS Local News, but as long as we've got the mic for a minute on this subject, the Benton headlines that go out daily are really, really useful for tracking what's going on with particularly federal policy around our broadcast and broadband.
They do a great job.
I guess my question for you is, what should people who are listening to KYRS who want to see more robust broadband in the rural communities out here do to make sure this happens? I mean, it seems like the state legislature is a really key place where we could be making a difference. But also you're saying we should maybe have more kind of grassroots effort at the PUD level?
Well, I think that you need to do both. One is that absolutely the state legislators need to hear that the people are adults and they can make the appropriate decision about which business model to use when it comes to building these networks. And so that's a message that that we should be sending to state legislatures, that and not just in Washington, but in every state, which is that the community should be able to make the choice as to whether or not a community network is appropriate and which business model to use. And then locally, I think it would absolutely make sense to engage in discussions with local PUD officials to get a sense of what their investment strategy is, if they have any thoughts about building networks that would connect communities. There's a number, I mean, I've talked about Chelan a couple of times, but there's many PUDs in Washington that are doing excellent things. And I think more would be interested in doing it if they heard that there is a demand for it. Too often, people just accept the fact that they have poor access,
right,
or no access, and they don't really make enough noise about it.
Well, so for people who want to get plugged in, again, ilsr.org and muninetworks.org. My guest has been Christopher Mitchell. Thank you so much for talking to Community Radio and for your work on community broadband.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad you're following these issues.